Well, hey there to all of our automotive enthusiast friends all around the planet Earth. Your fingers are doing the walking once again, right onto the play button of yet another...
Kevin, another bonkers episode of V8 Radio.
Ooh, you got that right. Bonkers. I don't even think that needs to be defined. It is, nope. It is bonkers.
It's a state of mind.
It is a state of life. This is the Bonkers V8 Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Ostie, joined as always by our esteemed co-host, Mr. Mike Cuball Clark.
How are we doing tonight, my man?
We're bonkers.
Aren't we, though? Aren't we?
Now, doesn't bonkers mean different things in different countries?
That is a great question. I'll have to ask my research team about that.
All right. I want to say there's some truth to that, but I'm not sure. Okay, well, now that we got past that, this is an automotive podcast that starts every episode with a riveting automotive trivia question in which Mr. Cuball Clark and I volley these questions to each other, withholding the answer to the end of the show, which is kind of a cruel trick, but it also builds like that classic level of suspense, you know, like an Indiana Jones film, which I'll talk about in a minute.
That's exactly what people think.
Isn't it, though? I know. Yes, the Spielberg, Lucas, Cuball, and Ostie. Done.
We got it.
So, Mr. Cuball, have you, in fact, prepared a trivia question for this episode?
In fact, I have. So let's go. All right, Kevin and listeners, what was the original name Chevrolet was going to use before it finally landed on the name Camaro?
That is a great question. Mm. Now, let me ask a little qualifier.
Yep.
Was this... So in later years, I know that focus groups came to be, and... In some cases, there were like hundreds of possible names for cars
right.
as they were being developed. Was this like widely known, or was it like just one of the possible many?
Well, I believe it was one of the finalist names that they were going to pick, but they opted not to.
Okay.
For reasons which will be revealed at the end of the show.
Outstanding. All right, well, if that's the case, then I'm going to say it was going to be called the Panther.
Panther?
Mm-hmm.
So aggressive.
Well, that's what the car was kind of supposed to be, right?
Yeah, I guess so. Had to compete with the Mustang, so.
That's right.
Yeah, Panther kind of makes sense.
They needed something that could take down a Mustang.
Right.
And on those...
They came up with the Camaro, which I believe means friend.
I think it's French for my little friend.
Nice.
Yeah, a nod to Louis Chevrolet, you know, of French lineage.
Right on.
I was listening to some music on an airplane today, and I tuned into some Steel Panther.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah. And Steel Panther is like... It's like the metal version of Spinal Tap, right?
Steel Panther.
Yeah, it's a satirical metal band that's actually really good.
It really is. They're hysterical.
They're hysterical, but there's some amazing musicians that have played in Steel Panther.
Without a doubt.
I was listening to an interview today with hosted by Rick Beato, and I, you know, 8 million subscribers know who Rick Beato is on his YouTube show. He's a music producer who does, among other things, interviews with musicians, but also dissects rock and roll and pop music songs by getting the source tracks and playing them one, you know, solo separately, so you can really listen to the drums by themselves and the guitarist by themselves. And he tells a story of how all this works together. And that sub series is called What Makes This Song Great. But Rick Beato had as a guest, Nuno Bettencourt, who is one of the greatest guitar players of all time, mostly known for his work in the band Extreme. So Extreme, of course, came out with the More Than Words tune in the 90s
yes.
and got all kinds of chart success. And it's like More Than Words is about the farthest thing from extreme the band there is, because they're a shredding metal band. And More Than Words was a very pop chart radio friendly song.
Right.
And it's funny to hear Nuno, the guitar player, you know, people ask him, you know, were you upset because you got all the success for this ballad that is acoustic and, you know, kind of sappy. And he's like, well, you know, if we didn't have the success of More Than Words, I'd be working at Burger King today. So it's kind of nice that it allowed us to do all the rest of the records. But there's a new Extreme album that came out called Extreme 6, which is, I think it's great. It's one of those you got to listen to a bunch of times. And meanwhile, there was a 2-hour interview with Rick Beato and Nuno that I recommend anybody listen to if you like, wow, this kind of music or not. Because Nuno, he was born in Portugal but grew up in Boston. And Nuno fully gets it. It's the exact same thing as a car guy. Nuno plays his music because he's an enthusiast, you know, and he talks about how he got to play with Paul McCartney at the Grammys. And he's like, wow, Paul McCartney comes out at 82 years old, and it's like a little kid. It's like a 12-year-old. He's like super. The first words out of Paul McCartney's mouth were, in a practice, he's like, well, hey, let's play.
Yeah.
And Nuno's like, all right, you know, no entourage or BS. It's just total passion, right? And that's what Nuno is all about. And that's what I love about the automotive thing. It's because you can walk into a parking lot and see some dude standing next to a rusted out, you know, Chevy Citation X11, but he loves it. And it's like,
yeah,
it's infectious and it's cool to talk to people that are into what they're into, you know? So the reason for this tirade is Nuno played on one of the Steel Panther albums, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, really?
So, Panther is my final guess on the Camaro precursor name. How about that, huh?
That, sir, was impressive.
That
well
was
done.
Bonkers, I will say.
It was bonkers. That, all day.
But definitely.
Thank you for that education.
Set aside some time to find that Nuno, N-U-N-O, Betancourt interview with Rick Beato. YouTube, and you're not going to be disappointed at all.
All right. I just jotted it down. Thank you.
Good. He also played with, well, that's a different story. Okay, so back to trivia questions.
Back to the car podcast.
Right, that. Sometimes I forget which one I'm on. I have a question that I prepared for you.
Ooh.
And a long time ago, I believe we talked about when was the first flying car. Remember that question?
Oh, boy.
This kind of goes hand in hand with that. When was the first amphibious car built?
Ooh, man.
And the bonus is, when was the first commercially available? The
amphibious car. Oh, man. I mean, everybody's heard of the amphicar. But was that the first amphibious car? I'm going to say no, that is not. And you like to ask questions like this whose answers are just way out of what you would think. So that said, I'm going to say the first amphibious car was built in 1902.
Wow, 19.
I'm taking it way back.
Heck yeah, you are. All right.
And for the bonus, the first commercially viable one, the first one offered commercially, I'm going to say the Amphicar.
Okay.
I forget what year, late 50s, early 60s, weren't they?
I don't know.
Okay. 1961 Amphicar. God darn it.
Okay.
All right. Great question.
1961. All right. Well, there you go. We'll find out the answers to these riveting questions at the end of the show.
These bonker questions.
For sure.
Yeah.
So, speaking of, go ahead, you go first.
So before we kick things off, I wanted to give a couple of shout outs if I could.
For sure.
So I was talking to my neighbor. I was outside on Sunday and my neighbor was walking by, walking his dog, my neighbor Mike. And, you know, he was, you know, making small talk, what's going on, yada, yada, yada. I'm like, oh, hey, Mike. And I said, yeah, my new job is going real great. I'm really loving it. He's like, I didn't know you got a new job. I'm like, oh, yeah. Yeah, I started May 15th. working for my buddy I do the podcast with, working, you know, for his shop, but I'm working remotely. He's like, you do a podcast?
Like, all right.
Like, yes.
That's our marketing team in action right there.
Right.
It's only been 7 years.
He's like, what's it called? I'm like, yeah, that's what I said. I've been doing it 7 years. Like, he's like, I never knew that. How did I not know that? I'm like, I don't know. He said, what's it called? And I said, well, it's called V8 Radio. He's like, I'm going to have to subscribe to that and listen. Thank you.
I said, well, yeah, all right, thank you.
We got ourselves a new subscriber. So thank you, Mike Mattis.
Heck yeah. Welcome aboard, Mike.
Yeah, welcome aboard.
You're going to learn all kinds of things about your neighbor now, man.
Oh, yeah. He's going to avoid me like the plague now. Uh-huh. But my second shout out, when I was driving back from the corporate office back up to the North Annex last week.
Corporate.
I stopped for gas. I was driving the GTO. I drove the GTO down, and it was a lot of fun. And I was making a gas stop, and I pumped my gas, and the display on the gas pump said to go inside for the receipt. And I didn't want to hog up the gas pump, so I parked in a spot at the gas station. I got out of the car, and I started walking, and I hear, hey, nice car. And I turned. It was this guy that was parked next to me with his wife in this Subaru SUV. I said, oh, well, thanks. I appreciate that. And he said, my first brand new car was a 64 convertible. I said, no kidding. I think we are going to be friends. And we just got to, we were talking for about 20 minutes about cars. And this gentleman's name was Phil, and he was with his wife, Margaret, Phil and Margaret Smith, who were from Arkansas. And they were traveling. They just decided to hop on the mother road and drive to Chicago from Arkansas. I think they hopped on in Joplin and just traveled Route 66 all the way to Chicago.
That's outstanding.
It's amazing that people are still doing that. And, you know, we were talking for another 10 minutes about that. And I turned them on to a restaurant that I really like that's on Route 66 called Del Rey's Chicken Basket in Willowbrook, Illinois. And it was just really, really good talking to them. So I wanted to give them a shout out as well and let them know that I really appreciated the time I spent with them.
That's great. Yeah, I love that.
Really, you know, salt of the earth kind of people. Really, really enjoyable.
All right. Well, hopefully they get a chance to tune in.
Yeah, man. Hope so, too.
Well, I had a very special encounter last weekend. I was working the stage at the Street Machine Nationals event in DuCoin, where every year I'm fortunate enough to get the chance to, kind of host that event, meaning... I kind of like to say I set the mood for the event. You know, I play music and I make all the stage announcements and I host the award ceremony and the burnout contest and all that jazz. And this year during the event, I was visited by a couple of gentlemen who came up to the stage and said, "Hey, we listened to your podcast. And we used to build muscle cars, you know, a long time ago in high school. And then we got out of it. And now we're retired. And because of your podcast, we kind of got back into building cars. And we're really having a great time."
Holy cow.
Yeah. And I was like, wow. Well, that's really cool. And it turns out the one gentleman's name is Mark Gibbons. And his buddy... who kind of flies under the radar. He wouldn't let me pick on him on the stage. But they came out from Maryland in a 68 Camaro.
Nice.
All the way to the Street Machine Nationals in Illinois. And
holy cats.
Part of the reason was to say hi, which was insane.
That's so bonkers.
Cool. That was totally bonkers. So... it was really awesome to chat with them. Very, very, very nice guys, and said straight up, they're like, you know, hearing your stories and hanging out, it reminded them of a lot of the good times they used to have building cars together and hanging out with their friends and doing cool stuff. And now they have a little more resources, and there's like a neighborhood shop, and a bunch of their buddies come together and they work on cars, and it's great. So I was totally floored by that, Actually, the Camaro they have is a 67. It's not a 68. Uh-huh. Super nice guys. And they brought some cool gifts from Maryland that blew me away. So we're going to have Mark as a guest on the show at some point. I'm talking to him now about getting that scheduled. Because he's got a lot of great things to share, good stories. So definitely shout out to Mark and his buddy. I don't get tripped up very often, but you know it was bad because I put him on the spot a little bit and did a live interview with him on stage over the PA system. Yeah, and he was totally fine with it, and I like forgot his name.
Oh no.
my mind was like going, I'm looking at this stuff and this concept of these guys coming out and listening to the show. And I'm, you know, yeah. Okay. So here I'm joined by Mark, and he's like, Mark Gibbons. I'm like, Mark Gibbons. I'm like, oh, damn it.
Oh man.
I meant no disrespect. I was overwhelmed completely. So that was really, really cool.
Dude, that is killer. That's what it's all about, man. That is fantastic. I love that.
It really is. And, you know, what I'm learning is we've made a lot of friends by doing this podcast. People out in the world who email us or call, or we'll meet them in person, or they'll come by the shop or whatever. And it's a different kind of thing because, like, I get a lot of commentary on our YouTube videos or the Muscle Car of the Week videos or after an event or something. But those media products, if you will, are maybe a few minutes long, and they're more produced, edited, polished, you know, calculated, right, if you will. But this is what you get. I mean, this is you and I, just two regular guys talking.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people listen and feel a connection, which is really amazing. And I do the same thing. I listen to certain stuff, like I was talking about Rick Beato before. I feel like I've known the guy my whole life, and I've never met him.
Right.
And when, you know, we meet people that are on the other end of this podcast, you know, a lot of times you can tell right away that it's just like this familiarity, you know, clicks right away, which is, sure, it's great. It's really neat. Totally appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fantastic. I mean, yeah, this show, having the privilege of co-hosting the show is really allowed me to meet so many people and do so many things. And I'm so appreciative, and I feel so fortunate to be able to do that, to meet these people and, you know, people going to shows and people who approach you just because of the show. That's really, really cool stuff. And that's a real gas. It really is.
Yeah, yeah. And Mr. Gibbons was also very nice during our little stage interview. He plugged the podcast. He's like, you people have to listen to this, you know. And
right,
that's a fine line for me because technically I'm working for somebody else when I'm doing those events. Right. So I'm not the guy who's going to be pimping our stuff. But he right, certainly did for us, and also the V8 Speed and Resto Shop. And he had talked to Joe. And there's a good story there that I'll save for his actual guest appearance. That was pretty cool.
Cool.
And then there was another guy who came up, and I never got his name because he kind of buzzed up and said a few things and took off. But this gentleman told me that he discovered our podcast like 3 months ago and is just about caught up with all 7 years now.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, wow.
Buddy, take a breath.
That's what I said. I said, so you probably
that
regret
is killer.
You regret coming to this event because you get to hear me more now after all that.
Right on.
And he's like, no. I'm like, don't you? That takes a lot of time. I'm like, man. So that was also very cool. He loves it. He's like, do more. So here you go.
That's cool. Hey, after 7 years, our show is finally starting to get some traction. This is great.
Well, we are like the Doritos of automotive podcasting. You know, we'll make more.
Exactly.
So awesome. you had mentioned that I guess a week or so ago you came down to the V8 Speed and Resto Shop to do some in-person work for a few days.
Yeah.
And it was cool. You took the GTO on a road trip and drove it down.
Yeah, I sure did. It ran flawlessly. No complaints whatsoever. It ran like a champ. It ran cool. The air blew cold. It was a great ride. The only thing I'm still missing is a fourth gear. That's all. It's just, mm-hmm. just missing that overdrive.
Well, there is a plan.
We have a solution for that.
We're working on that. That's good.
Yeah.
I had drove my Riviera to the Street Machine Nationals, which is from where our shop is located. It's only about an hour and a half away. But we camp just down the road from the DuCoin State Fairgrounds where that event is hosted, and driving. It was just such an awesome drive. Country roads. It was, you know, warm out at night. It wasn't super hot. And then you'd wake up in the morning and go out and start the car up at, you know, 6:30 in the morning or whatever, and quietly navigate through this campground of, you know, people uh-huh. that are asleep. But then again, I love those early morning summertime drives, all the windows down and some coffee and music going. And
yes.
And just, it was about a 35-minute drive to get to the fairgrounds. And it just wipes the slate clean, man. It was just,
oh yeah,
it refreshes the soul.
Yeah, you're doing that, like you said, the windows down, nice and breezy, and you just can't help but think, man, life is good. This is
life
great.
Is great. Yeah. And you know, I don't have air conditioning in the Riv, so that's why the windows are down, but it's still cool.
Yeah, right on.
Like Mr. Fancy Pants over here.
And, hey, man, if you're going to do it, do it.
Did you wear your Tomacan GTO shoes while you were doing this?
You know what? I'm looking for a pair of those, so we're going to do that.
I don't think they made them in your size.
I don't
Judging by the style of the Tom McCann GTO shoe, I think those people had small feet. That's all I'm going to say. And I don't even know what that means.
Right. whatever that means. Who knows?
But, again, like we always talk about, when you get out behind the wheel of the car for a while, it's also when all those little things come back to you that you want to do to it, and fixes or improvements. Yours, of course, the big one being the gear ratio.
Right.
I've got a little bit of a list of things on the Riv that I want to mm-hmm. tune up or fix or whatever. And you got to be careful, because then you get out of the car and that whole list seems to vaporize out of your mind.
Right.
Begin it again, you know? So mm-hmm. I always fire up a note on my phone and dictate all these lists of grievances as I'm driving, so I don't forget them.
That's a great idea. I should try
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Email it to yourself, and then it's there when you get there.
Mm-hmm. Just you stumble upon it like, oh yeah, I wanted to do that.
Yep, for sure.
Yeah, I have a few items on my list already. So and you're right, as I drive it more, the list is added to quite a bit. So
yeah, the list never goes away. But.
No, it does not.
Yeah.
It does not. But that's the fun of it. That's why we do it.
That is the fun of it. So in addition to the nice summer drive down to the shop, how is the rest of your experience working at the mothership?
It's great. It's a totally different dynamic than it is from being remote. I got to, you know, do things a little more hands-on. One of our techs, one of our mechanics came in and was looking for some exhaust pipe, said it was 2-inch. It needs to be a square flange. I'm like, what is this guy talk? Square flange on this exhaust header. I got to see this to believe it. So it was on one of the vehicles that we're currently working on. And so I ran, found the vehicle. I'm like, oh yeah, it's a flathead, and the exhaust header has a square flange on it that we need to find a mate for it to make some new pipe. I'm like, okay, and I measured it, and okay, now I know exactly what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And if he were trying to explain that to me, either through messaging or otherwise, or you know, snapping pictures, it just wouldn't have the same effect as it would have had I not been there. And that was yeah. really enjoyable. It was a nice change of pace.
Good.
And same guy was looking for, is trying to mock up a steering setup, you know, on an F-body car, using a rack and pinion steering and having to kind of put together a steering steering solution to connect it from the steering wheel to the rack, and you know, trying to use a combination of different connectors to make this happen. And so I'm out there with him, and I'm like, oh yeah, if we have this piece here and this piece there, we have a support piece there, we'll order that and we'll get that for you, and then we'll make that happen. So it was really neat to be able to kind of, you know, be part of it, and rather than just, you know, do things from afar. So
mm-hmm.
That was pretty neat.
That is neat. And we had talked before that one of my number one concerns is that working remotely, I don't want you to feel like you're in a void out there,
right,
and lose connection. And the current schedule has you, you know, coming down once a month or so.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we tune that up to more or less or what, I don't know, whatever. Yeah. But I'm glad that when you come down, you are able to be more part of it, because, you know, in all honesty, the process of doing what you do for the shop can be done anywhere, but
right,
there's definitely value to, plus you get to hang out with people and see cool cars, you know?
Yeah. That's a nice fringe benefit.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. And, you know, I get to get reacquainted with the rest of the crew and everybody else. And, it's pretty neat. You know, you feel like you try to form a bond with these people, and it's kind of neat to be able to see them. So mm-hmm. I like that too.
Well, they've been listening to you for years, you know, so.
Right. Finally get to put a face to the voice. So,
yeah,
good
right.
stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. And this past weekend, I was visiting my mom in Scottsdale, Arizona, helping her out with some stuff. And it was kind of interesting because one of the things that I help her out with here and there is Kelly and I both went out to give her a hand. And, you know, as you were mentioning working remotely, it kind of reminded me of this, that she buys things that get shipped in, you know, from Amazon or groceries mm-hmm. or whatever. And a lot of times it doesn't really feel up to breaking down all the shipping boxes and all the containers
oh, right.
everything comes with. And kind of puts them in the garage, and next thing you know, she's got a, you know, a stack of these things, and we go out and give her a hand by breaking those things down and helping her organize and whatnot. But that's always my opportunity to kind of pick through the garage, because my parents moved out to Arizona in '97, and they brought a lot of the stuff, obviously, from our previous house, which is the house that
right.
I grew up in the Chicago area. So there's artifacts, you know, from that were my dad's and mm-hmm. stuff that was mine and everything. It's kind of like, you know, going into the old basement and digging around.
Right.
And I found a couple of cool things this time that I didn't know were there. And one of them is the 50th anniversary issue of Hot Rod Magazine, which
really?
Was January 98. Okay. Because Hot Rod came out in 1948.
Right.
And the January 98 issue, you know, those magazines came together 3 months or so before their on sale date. That was the first issue I ever worked on when I went there.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
The 50th anniversary issue?
Yeah, that was my first one. And I was selling ads at that point into that. I've got ads in that issue that I sold into it. And it was their biggest issue ever, because being the 50th, they took a lot, they took advantage of the hype of, you know,
yeah,
the 50th anniversary, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know, 200, if I remember correctly, it's like 236 pages or something. It's a thick issue.
Wow.
And they had a special newsstand promotion where it came with a reprint of the very first Hot Rod magazine from 48.
Ooh.
With the little Track T Roadster on the cover, driven by Eddie Hulse. And I think that car still exists, by the way. And it was polybagged together on the newsstand. So some of the magazine terms back in the day, if you had a magazine that was stapled together, folded and stapled, that was mm-hmm. called saddle stitched. And if
yeah.
it had a binding, that was called being perfect bound. So this mm-hmm. was, because of the size, it was perfect bound. And then it came in a plastic bag, which was known as a polybag. Well, I remember getting, and I think I still have this in a crate over here in my garage, what's called a tear sheet. And a tear sheet is an unbound copy of the magazine. It's just a
Ooh.
Stack of all of the pages. And the publisher will distribute tear sheets to the staff as a way to, it's already kind of been printed. Sometimes they print a small run of the tear sheets and you can kind of see like very last minute if something's not right. But really it's more of a, you know, this is what it's going to look like kind of thing before it goes to bind. There's a step right before that called a blue line, which is the drop dead deadline for getting editorial changes or getting an advertisement to be placed in it or any of those changes. So you get the blue line and then it goes out for print. You get a tear sheet to come back, which is kind of cool. And I have the tear sheets from the 50th anniversary issue. Wow. And now I have a sealed poly bag copy as well with the reprint of the first one. So
really,
both ends of the spectrum right there.
It was a sealed poly bag?
Yeah, it's never
been
opened.
That's
nuts. It's sitting right here, yeah.
How did you not have that anyway?
My dad got it.
Wow.
My dad went out to the newsstand and bought one. He bought a bunch of them. And I had a poly-bagged issue, a copy of it. Because, again, being as an ad sales guy back in those days, I would get a stack of copies that were that I could send out to advertisers, you know, and you'd put a little post-it note on the page of their ad and say, here, you know, how's it look? And here's a complimentary issue, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Or if there was a story in the magazine that featured a shop or a builder or a person, you know, we could send them copies and whatnot. So I had some of those but I think I gave them all away, cause they were hot items. And, so that was kind of an interesting, you know, jog down memory lane to be holding this polybag copy of this issue. I was like, wow. And I never knew they had it. So that was cool. And then it reminded me of one of the premiums that was also being sold at that same time. And it was a 50th anniversary Hot Rod Magazine commemorative pocket knife, right? So it came in a little wooden box that was like laser etched to look like a toolbox with drawers on it. And you'd open it up, and inside was this red knife with a flamed paint job on it, and the Hot Rod logo was laser etched on the blade. And they were selling these, you know, it was like the Danbury Mint or whatever the heck, you know, thing. You buy one of the magazines. It came with a, you know, a collector plate or something, you know.
Certificate of authenticity.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's
signed,
right.
Signed and numbered. So I had one of those knives also back in the day, and that was the year of my very first SEMA show as well, was in 97. And walking the SEMA show floor, the year of the Hot Rod 50th anniversary, wearing the Hot Rod 50th logo on your polo shirt and everything. I mean, it was cool. It was the best way to start that career.
Yeah, right.
You know, being involved with that, you know, it was a big high visibility. We were good guys no matter what. You know, if you were part of the Hot Rod 50th, you know, everybody had a story. Everybody wanted to say hi. And, of course, everybody wanted to be in the magazine and all that. So, the knife is in my pocket the whole time. And at the end of the show, end of the week, a bunch of us go out to dinner. And I may have told the story here before, but the knife is in my pocket and I get a couple of sake bombs.
Soda pops in you?
A couple of sake bombs down my throat that I think were on fire, literally. And next thing you know, I'm going to show either Jeff Smith from Hot Rod or Rob Canaan or somebody this really cool knife that I got. And of course, it closes on my finger and I'm shooting blood all over the place at the restaurant.
Hell yeah. You know?
And I get up and my blood is quite thinned at this point because it's diluted a little bit. Yeah. And I go in the bathroom. Somewhat. Yeah, I go in the bathroom and this dude comes in and he's like, are you okay? And I said, and I'm holding, we were at a P.F. Chang's restaurant, you know, so they have cloth white napkins, cloth white tablecloth. And I got this cloth napkin that's just drenched in blood and it's dripping all over the floor. And this guy's like, I followed your blood footprints all the way into the bathroom here. And do you need help? And I think I'm slowly like sliding down the side of the wall to the ground.
fine.
he gets a butterfly bandage and some water and they, you know, kind of doctor me up and get me back to my feet. And I go sit down. Well, over the years, I lost the knife. And a couple of years ago, one of our customers gave me one that was really? In the box as well. And he's like, yeah, I figured you'd appreciate this because I know you worked there at that point. So I got the magazine, I got the knife, and as you and I are talking today, I'm writing the script right now for the 2023 SEMA Leaders and Legends Banquet, which is where we induct members into the SEMA Hall of Fame. And I'm fortunate enough to be emceeing that event and writing it once again, which is just an unbelievable honor. And the incoming chairman of the board of SEMA is a gentleman named Kyle Fickler. And Kyle is the guy that saved my life in the bathroom when I cut myself.
Right. That's right.
Back in 1997 with the hot rod knife. So it's interesting that still in it. And not to say that I wouldn't still be in it.
Yeah.
But, you know, you, of course, being the industry guy.
You know it.
This is an industry that is like, it's your life. It's not a job. It's not a career. Right. It's what you do. It's just what drives you.
Yeah, it's almost a calling.
It really almost is. And it sounds kind of cheesy to say that kind of stuff, you know. But, you know, so Fickler, after I met him on the bathroom floor covered in blood, over the years, he and I, you know, he's gone to different companies and had different roles in the industry, but we always see each other all over the place and laugh about that story and become great friends, you know, because of that. The running joke is that this guy saved my life. I'm actually thinking about introducing him that way at the at the banquet.
You have to, right? I absolutely have to, 100%. I'll be disappointed if I find out you didn't.
I got a text from SEMA CEO Mike Spagnola today, and we're discussing some of the speech things. And part of me doesn't want to run that past him, but we do have to do a read through in a couple days, and it'll be in there. And I don't have any doubt that they'll let that stay. That's fine.
Yeah,
because that's what this is. You know,
right.
It's what this is.
He's a legend, Kyle Fickler, legend of SEMA.
In my mind, heck yeah.
Yeah.
You and I might not be having this conversation.
Had it not been for Kyle Fickler.
Yeah. So it's just great to have these, like our friends that listen and come see us and the customers that, you know, entrust us to work on their cars and all that stuff. You know, when you got hired, I remember you and Kelly were having a deep conversation about what the working hours are.
Mm-hmm.
Because
and Kelly, what they are not
and what they are not. Yeah. And Kelly being the, you know, the owner of the business, she's always thinking about this place and trying to get things in order and trying not to forget details and sending notes and sending messages throughout our you know, communication system,
right,
and not expecting somebody at 2 a.m. to respond to somebody's message. But some people do, you know, and she's like, no, you need to stop because that's your time. It's personal time. And I'm not doing this demanding an answer right away. But as you observed when you came this last time to the shop for the few days that you were here working, mm-hmm, and you stayed at our house, and what happens after hour, you know, Kelly and I will do a full day at the shop and then we'll come home and eat something. And then we do another 3, 4, 5 hours at night.
Yeah.
Because this is just what we do, you know?
Right.
It's
right.
We help people build dream cars, you know?
It doesn't happen in a vacuum. Someone's got to be running it.
Somebody's got to be running it, but it's not the type of thing that you hang up at 5 o'clock and go, man, I'd be happy to get out of this place.
Right.
Because we're all car guys and we're thinking about this stuff anyway, you know, all the time.
Exactly. Thank you. Exactly. And when I do see those messages at night, first of all, I can't stand to have anything hanging out in the breeze like that. If somebody asks me something and I see it, I can't just let it go. I'm almost compelled to answer it, especially if it's something that's a two-word answer that takes 2 seconds to answer or it doesn't require a lot of research. You know, let me just shoot it back to you. That way you have what you need and you can move on and you don't have to circle back, or I don't forget that you asked, and, you know, all of that. And she gets a little miffed at me when I do that. It's like, listen, it's after hours. Why are you on the podium? Like, dang it.
Yeah.
Well, it was on my phone, and I had an alert, and I just wanted to answer it back real quick, and that's it.
Well, Podio is the name of the software that we use. Right. But there, what would be great is if you could time the release of those messages.
That would be dynamite. We got to talk to developers.
She could come up with a big, long list of stuff that wouldn't send until 7 a.m. on Monday morning or something.
Right.
And that way you're not compelled to, you know. But again, how horrible is it to go, hey, we need to figure out an exhaust for a independent rear suspension Trans Am.
Yes.
Got any, you know, can you find some Obel tubing that we can make a muffler? And it's like, oh, I'm off, man. I'm not working. It's off the clock, pal.
It's 501, buddy. No, sir. Absolutely not.
Because the reality is, you know, you and I right now are both thinking about that as we're talking, and it's like,
Yep, yes, I am.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. So.
Yeah. How are you going to route that? Can it go over? Does it have to go under? How's that going to work? How's it going to sound? All that good stuff.
Yeah. You should see how that's going to go. So a couple weeks ago, I released a short walk around video of that independent rear suspension Trans Am that we're building. It's a Heights rear end. It's got a Ford 9-inch center. Half shaft, some crazy looking upper and lower tubular control arms that bend all around.
Yeah.
And exhaust, there's no way you can run exhaust like you can traditionally over the axle. And I am not a guy who likes to run exhaust ahead of the axle and out in front of the rear wheels.
Right. Yes.
So the solution is pretty cool because we're doing it almost Corvette style because that rear axle being independent, the center section no longer moves.
Right.
So it's fixed to the bottom of the body, which means we can go under right through the middle and not worrying about crushing it or having it hang too low. And we are doing some neat stuff with the mufflers and with that. We're making the pieces to go in the middle, and it's going to be really cool. So
it is. I was fortunate enough when I was down there to see a little bit of that mock-up. This is the early stages of the mock-up of where it's going to go under that center section. And it was really cool. What our your guy...
Red's doing the work, yeah.
Red was doing that. It was really cool stuff. And it was really neat. Another issue that we were bouncing off of each other was the drive shaft angle. Because that center section is fixed, there's no pinion adjustment, no pinion angle adjustment on there. On the back, rather. So with a drive shaft with, you know, two sets of U-joints could possibly introduce some vibration if the, you know, if the angles aren't equal but opposite. So they were trying to come up with a solution about that, which was pretty cool. So they're thinking about a CV joint.
Well, ideally, you want that shaft to be straight.
Well, you want some movement in there. You want I think the U-joints to move a little bit, to rotate a little bit.
Well, to a degree, but the angle, you don't want an angle. You want a straight line. And the compromise, that's why we have U-joints, is because when the rear end moves around or if the engine in the front pitches, you don't want to lose, you know, the connection. So they put the U-joints in there to allow that shaft to be dynamic in that angle as it goes up and down, or the tires wrap the rear end up or whatever. But if you look at... you know, European cars, you look at a Mercedes-Benz that's rear-wheel drive that has a V8 engine, it doesn't have U-joints.
Really?
It has what they call flex discs, and they are 1-inch thick rubber discs
on
opposite ends. Yeah, so you got your rear-end flange, a flex disc, drive shaft, flex disc, yoke, transmission. And the flex disc allows for just enough torsional weirdness to happen as the car goes down the road and over bumps and whatever, and it silences all the vibration noise, all the road noise, because the rubber that shaft isn't supposed to move in that situation. So I'm gonna say that's not off the table yet for this car.
Right
It's pretty cool.
An interesting solution. I wonder if those flex joints can hold up to the torque that that engine be putting out.
So this is an LS3. It's, I think it's a 525 horse version, right?
Actually, I think it's the 480 horse.
Oh, the 480. Okay, so 480 still, you know, and those flex discs are used in like the AMG S65 twin turbo cars, you know, that make 750 horsepower and, you know, 800 foot-pounds and all day long. It's not a problem.
All right. I'm a believer.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good, it's an interesting idea. And once you get away from the fact that that thing does not have to move, it really should not, there's no reason for that drive shaft to move outside of, again, body twisting and, you know, structural limitations, I guess, of not being able to be, you don't want it rigid.
Right.
But you don't have to have a measured driveline angle or a sweet spot, you know, right between compression and full droop of the rear end to where this thing is going to be happy under all situations. It's straight shot, man. But so then, you know, it's an LS engine. These things are designed to be pitched downwards.
Right.
Because that's how they fit in the regular car. It pitches down and then the U-joint and then the, you know, so... These are the engineering challenges that are always fun.
Yeah, that is some pretty interesting stuff. I enjoyed hearing some of that conversation that they were having, that Trevor and Brian were having regarding that. So that was a treat to be able to be a part of that.
So definitely. Another interesting phone call I got today, as a matter of fact, was hopefully injecting some new life into a project I've talked about here over the years, and that is my desire to do this Cadzilla documentary, right?
Yes.
And you can just keyword search Cadzilla on our va8radio.com website and the episodes will pop up because it's been talked about a few times. But the missing ingredient in producing this is going to be the ability to incorporate Mr. Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top, who owns the car, as a contributing member of the interviewees of this documentary that I want to do. Right. And I hit a few walls trying to reach out to him. I remember the story. I bumped into him in the bathroom. At the SCTA, you know, Bonneville banquet a few years ago in Pomona. That didn't go anywhere. You think?
That was awesome. That's great.
So, yeah, our marketing assistant, Lisa, knows that this is a project I want to do. And she kind of started moving the needle a little bit on this, which was, I'm so grateful to her for doing this. Mm-hmm. And she reached out to our friend Rick Love at Vintage Air because... Jack Chisenhall, who started Vintage Air, was the project manager on Cadzilla. It was him and Billy that came up with this car. And that story will reveal itself in the actual film. But her and I were talking, and she's like, so how do we get Billy? Because he's coming to town to play a concert in September. And I said, yeah, but I'm pretty sure I can't stand there in the front row and, you know, throw a bra up on stage or something with my phone number on it. Or maybe a pair of shorts from the bathroom, you know, or something.
Right. But, remember these, Billy?
Yeah, right. So she's like, well, I know people in television around here. I might be able to try to get some kind of connection that way. And I said, yeah, who knows? So anyway, she reached out to Jack Chisenhall through Rick Love. And Rick said he talked to Jack, and he said, do you still got a good phone number for Gibbons? And Jack's like, yeah, the person I used to talk to that worked with him isn't healthy at this point, so she's not really doing it. But so Rick calls me, and he's like, I got an idea. I'm going to have somebody give you a call. So I get a call from Jimmy Shine, from Shine's Speed Shop. Yeah. And I know Jimmy casually, you know, we don't hang out together every day, but I certainly know who he is. Did a whole bunch of time interviewing him in Saudi a few years ago. And
cool. And,
So he's like, what are you doing? And I told him, I said, I'm thinking about this Cadzilla thing. And he's like, well, I'm emailing Billy pictures, and you know, he's in England. I'm sending him stuff right now. I talk to him like every day. So I'll give him a call for you.
Nice.
Right on.
Heck yeah.
So
Jimmy Shine coming through.
Well, we hope so. Yeah, he's certainly certainly willing and doing his part. You know, obviously there's no guarantees that the Reverend Gibbons is going to be interested or not, but Jimmy seems to think so. And I said, hey, if you got a few minutes, we'd love to have his feedback on this too, as what this car, how it has affected and impacted other builders, because it affected everyone. So pretty cool.
Absolutely.
I'm excited.
100%. That's killer.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's good to catch up with him. And in a couple of weeks, will be that Leaders and Legends banquet in Southern Cal. So Kelly and I are going to go to Shine's Speed Shop and check out some of the stuff that he's working on while we're out there.
Nice.
Hang out for a little while. Pretty cool stuff,
good,
you know?
Man. Yeah. I love it. I love it.
And it really, when people ask, you know, what's the benefit of doing this stuff? It's not that I'm not ROI driven, right? I don't do something to go, we're going to make $48 on this. And then, you know, that's going to be a profitable win. I do things because I love the opportunity to do this kind of stuff. And as you work with people, you form relationships that maybe someday, if you have another idea, somebody that you met along the way that you now are friends with might be able to help make that come true also. And it's neat when that kind of stuff happens.
Yeah. I know this has been a real passion project for you, and I know you've been thinking about it for a long, long time. And it's cool that it's maybe happening now.
Passion project is a technical term for I have no money.
Yeah, you know, that's not what I meant by it.
Well, that's the truth. But really, it's a passion project of everybody. Everybody who wants to be in this just wants to be in it. You know, they just want to do it because it's cool,
right?
You know? So,
yeah, it's for sure.
I'm hoping we can again advance the progress on this project because it needs to happen.
It does need to happen. None of us are getting younger, man. Let's make it happen.
Well, you're
let's
not,
go. You know. Which I'm not.
made me think of another passion project, the Bonneville Up to Speed podcast. And you got a chance to listen to the last one, right?
I did. Dude, that was super cool. I really dug it a lot.
Well, thank you. It was a little bit of a departure. So if you are not a regular subscriber to the Bonneville Up to Speed podcast, I'm not just trying to promote that series, even though I think it's worthy of it. This particular episode that we just released was different because every episode we've had a guest, and this one, rather than have a guest, I thought it'd be kind of interesting to go back in time and look at a historical land speed racing event through the lens of somebody who was there. And the event that I chose anyway was when Craig Breedlove broke the land speed record and got it back from John Cobb, the British racer, in the Spirit of America jet powered streamliner. And he did this in 1963. And while Kelly and I were camping out at the Street Machine Nationals a couple of weeks ago, she went to an antique store and came back with a stack of Hot Rod magazines from 63 and 64. And she's like, here, I know you like these. And I was very happy she got some for me. And on the cover of one of them is the Spirit of America. And I'm like, I love that car. I've always loved that car. I love that story. Craig Breedlove is an American hero. And unfortunately, he passed away earlier this year. But everybody kind of knows the story to a degree. And I thought, where's a different angle on this story? And I found that a guy from Sports Illustrated magazine was there on the Salt covering that for Sports Illustrated. Definitely not a car magazine, not a car guy approach. And I thought, what if I just read that article word for word out of this August 19th, 1963 Sports Illustrated magazine as written by this sports writer. And so that's what that episode is. And it's pretty cool.
Yeah, well, let me just stop you there, because you didn't just read it. I mean, you gave it real life and real depth, and the production value of it was dynamite with the musical interludes in there, and it was, I mean, I was on the edge of my seat listening to this thing, and it was really cool.
Well, that's awesome. I appreciate that because, again, being a solo person in that one, I rarely do anything where it's just me doing a monologue, you know, mm-hmm. it's you and I, or it's a guest, you know, whatever. So to read that, it's more dramatic, the way it's written, and it's not written to be read out loud. It's written to be mm-hmm. read silent. So it's kind of weird the way it's written. So it was a little bit challenging to actually read it that way. And I always thought it'd be kind of fun to do, you know, books on tape kind of thing. And in fact, a million years ago, when I was still living in the Chicago area, I used to volunteer at a thing called Chris Radio. Never tell you about that?
Mm-mm.
There is a service called the Chicago Radio Information Service. And
really?
It's a publicly funded volunteer thing where volunteers show up at this studio at the Chicago Cultural Center on Randolph and Michigan Avenue, right downtown.
Yeah.
And you go downstairs and there's a radio studio and they hand you books and magazines and current stuff. And you and another person just do tag team shifts reading the newspaper. And it's for people who are visually impaired that can't read, can't see, or they can't read, and they still want the info. So it's a special band of radio wave. You need a special radio, and you can get one. If you have the need for this, you can get that thing for free. And then you tune in, and then at certain times of the day, at noon to 2, it's the Chicago Tribune. And from 2 to 3, it's the Sun-Times. And from 3 to 4, it's, you know, something else. And and I used to do that. I used to do a couple hours every week as a volunteer reading the paper for the Chicago Radio Information Service.
Wow.
So I always enjoyed doing that kind of stuff. But this one was different. This was like radio cinema. You know, it was
what it was. Radio cinema. Yeah. I was on the edge of my seat. I'm like, what's going to happen next? This is really cool.
Well, awesome. That means it worked, and that's good.
Yeah, it totally worked. It totally worked. Yeah.
It's a great story.
It's a great story. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and it really is.
That time period was only the beginning. I mean, so much happened after that in the world of land speed racing that is in the history books, but it's fun to make it feel current, like, you know, it's happening right now. And getting back to, you know, when we started the show and I was talking about that interview with Nuno Bettencourt. So here's a guy who's a, you know, highly accomplished musician. He's played with everybody. He toured with Janet Jackson and Rihanna and pop stars and every rock and roll musician you can imagine and, you know, all this stuff. And they were giving him a hard time at one point because the latest album took like 15 years to make. And they're like,
wow,
why did it take you 15 years to make? And he goes, well, look, I'm not going to release something until I really dig it, right? So he said, I wrote 4 albums and recorded like basically 4 albums worth of stuff, but it just wasn't there. It wasn't like, he goes, my metric is, I know it's a good song that I wrote when I'm compelled to call my brother and go, can I play something? You got to hear this, right? And he said, when we were doing this latest album, he goes, I called Steve Vai and called Yngwie Malmsteen, all these guitar, you know, hero musicians, and said, can you come down to the studio? I just want to play this for you. You know, he's not thinking if it's going to make a dollar or if it's going to be a big tour. It's just something that he really, really liked. And he's like, I love this. So I want to share this with you. And interestingly, that's when I sent you that link to the Bonneville cast, because I really enjoyed that one. I'm like, I want to share this one. This one's neat. So I'm glad that came across.
Yeah, it was neat. You should explore that a little bit more. That medium, like that.
What do you mean, like copyright violations? Like So here's your chance, friends. This might have to disappear because I did credit Sports Illustrated, but I read their stuff, and I don't know if that was legal.
Well, you did credit, so, you know, it was 1963. I don't think they're going to, you know, I think they got their ROI off of that story.
I think the copyright is good for 99 years after the author's death.
Oof.
And the author of that particular piece died in 14 or something, because I was going to try and get him on if he was still around. I was going to.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So that didn't work, but well, but yeah, maybe I'll do more of those. That's fun. I mean, and I got a whole stack of you know hot rod magazines and stuff like that, but they're not written the same way. You know, that was an account. That wasn't like a tech mm-hmm. piece or a how-to. That was a story, you know. So I'll have to find, and they're in there. They're in these old magazines. A lot of these events were covered that way, and the like. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'll take that note. Thank you. Yeah, look into it.
Yeah, you bet. Yeah, I really liked it. Good stuff.
All right. Well, our listeners are really upside down, trying to figure out who made the first floating car. The real meat and potatoes of this show. You just gotta give them what they want, man.
That's what they came for. Let's do this. Oh my Lord.
you go first.
Yeah, man. So I asked you, what was the original name Chevrolet was going to use before finally landing on the name Camaro?
Right.
And Kevin just out of the gate said Panther. It was the Chevrolet Panther. And Kevin, ding, 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 you are correct, sir. It was the Panther.
Hey, all right.
Hey, so it says here the original name of the Chevrolet Camaro was Chevrolet Panther. The name was chosen because it sounded similar to the Ford Mustang, which was the Camaro's main competitor. However,
it sounded sounded similar.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe if you got a hair lip or something. Panther.
However, the name Panther was eventually abandoned because it was considered too aggressive.
Too much so. You know,
there you have it.
You know how I knew that?
Tell me. Was this a question already?
Yes.
Mother. Flippity-flop. God bless America. And you probably asked it, didn't you?
I did.
God! Shut up. That ain't cool, man. And you just played right along. Oh, you played me like a fiddle. Like a fiddle. Oh, man.
I was waiting again for the light to come on. I was hoping you'd be like, this is familiar to me somehow.
Well, you know, what can I tell you? So many episodes, so many questions.
For sure.
So we've had over 150 episodes. That makes over 300 questions, plus any guests. Guest questions. So yeah, it's it's easy to get lost in the mix.
It's technically millions.
Exactly.
So, and if somebody hadn't heard that, then it's a new question, right? New to me.
New to me. Not new to you.
Yeah. Oh, that was outstanding. Idiot. Okay, but at the same time, I still wasn't 100% sure that was the answer, because I'm like, I think I remember this being Panther, but maybe I just had Steel Panther on the brain.
Maybe. Yeah, you went this whole diatribe about Steel Panther just to sell it. Well, oh, jeez.
But that was legit. That happened today. So.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. All right. So my question to you was, when was the first amphibious car? And then the bonus, when was the first commercially available amphibious car? And your guess was the first was in 1902, way back. Yeah. And the first commercially available was the Amphicar later in the late 50s or early 60s. And you landed on 1961.
Right.
All right. Well, the first known it is funny because I had this idea for this question. I started to kind of research the answer, and then I'm like, isn't this a boat, you know? Because the answer was the first known self-propelled amphibious vehicle.
Ooh.
Which was a steam-powered wheeled dredging barge named the Uructor Amphibiolus. And it was conceived and built by a United States inventor, Oliver Evans, in 1805.
What? Come on. Although
it was disputed to have successfully traveled over land or water under its own steam. So who knows? So we'll move on to the bonus question.
Yes, please.
And you said 1961 Amphicar. Well, yeah. The Amphicar Model 770 is an amphibious automobile which was launched at the 1961 New York Auto Show. So, ding, ding, ding.
Holy cow, about that? I got the bonus.
You did.
That's killer, man.
Made in West Germany.
You, making it easy for me.
See? Made in West Germany between 61, marketed through 68, even though production ceased in 65, apparently. So there you go.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. And just so you know, the name Amphicar is a portmanteau of amphibious and car.
Oh, man. Is it? Is it now?
Yeah, I know. It's not quite so obvious.
Portmanteau. That's nice.
Amalgamation, if you will, of amphibious and car.
So if you've enjoyed this V8 radio episode, please tune in next time.
That's right. That's a big ask right there.
Yeah, exactly.
But alas, that's all I have. I got to get up in the morning and jump on a plane to go to the four-wheel jamboree in Bloomsburg, Pennsylvania.
Oh, boy. Well, right on.
Looking forward to that. Yeah, yeah.
Cool, man. Well, good show. Yeah.
Great show. Any upcoming weekend plans for the GTO?
Nothing that I can think of right now. I mean, there's things I need to do, but I don't know if I'm going to do them this weekend or not. So,
all right, there you go. Nothing like a plan.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay.
Good non-plan for a plan.
That's right. All right, well, this has been the V8 Radio Podcast. Hopefully you enjoyed it enough to click that subscribe button so that you don't have to remember to push the play button. It'll just kind of happen on its own, kind of anyway. And you can find this on all the major podcast platforms. If you feel so kind as to leave a review, we'd appreciate it, especially if it's a positive one.
yes, please.
We may even share that on the show. And I will say this. Here's the real meat of the whole show, right at the very end. Guess what we finally got?
What do we got?
V8 radio stickers.
We do?
Yes, we do.
Holy cats.
How about that, huh?
Well, we have arrived, sir.
Aren't you glad you listened all the way to the end? So to anybody who, how should we start dispersing these, right? Maybe we leave a comment on our V8 Radio Facebook page. And for the first 20 people that comment, for the first person that comments, we'll send you out a sticker. How about that?
Boom. Love it. Done.
Because, you know, maybe two, hopefully, at least.
Yeah, we'll,
we'll actually do we'll that, but... We can cover 20, I know that.
Yeah.
So I'll get you a stack, so when you're at your you know, your gas stops for the GTO, you can hand those out to these new friends that you make.
All right, right on. We'll do. Yeah, appreciate cool. that.
All right. Well, for Mr. Mike at Cue Ball Clark, I'm Kevin Oste. This has been the V8 Radio Podcast, and we're reminding you to keep the wet side down as you tool around in your Schwimmwagen. And we'll see you next time on V8 Radio.
Oh, right.